issues at all of those levels. The power of self-healing is now available. In acceptance, we are free to be in the present. Once we have accepted our own true nature and the ways of the universe as they are reflected in our world, there is no longer regret about the past, nor is there fear of the future. Fear of the future no longer exists when the past has been healed. This is because, in the usual ego-oriented state of consciousness, the ego tends to project the past upon the future, and a past that is viewed negatively becomes fearful when projected upon the imaginary future. Our letting go of the lower energies of guilt, fear, anger, and pride has alleviated the weight of the past and cleared the clouds of the future. We face today with optimism and are grateful to be alive. We see that yesterday is gone, tomorrow has not yet come, and we have only today. In summary, then, the consciousness level of acceptance is one that we all long to achieve, for it enables us to find freedom from most of life's problems and to experience fulfillment and happiness. Chapter 12. Love. On the level of love, we are heartfelt, generous, nurturing, affectionate, steadfast, and forgiving. Love is protective, collaborative, uplifting, holistic, and gracious. It is characterized by warmth, gratitude, appreciation, humility, completion, vision, purity of motive, and sweetness. Love is a way of being. It is the energy that radiates when the blocks to it have been surrendered. It is more than an emotion or a thought. It is a state of being. Love is what we have become through the pathway of surrender. It is a way of being in the world that says, "How can I be of help to you? How can I comfort you? How can I loan you money when you're broke? How can I help you find a job? How can I console you when you've suffered a major loss in your family?" Lovingness is a way through which we light up the world. Love in everyday life. Everyone has the opportunity to contribute to the beauty and harmony of the world by showing kindness to all living things and thereby supporting the human spirit. That which we freely give to life flows back to us because we are equally part of that life. Like ripples on the water, every gift returns to the giver. What we affirm in others, we actually affirm in ourselves. Once we become willing to give love, the discovery quickly follows that we are surrounded by love and merely didn't know how to access it. Love is actually present everywhere. Its presence only needs to be realized. Love expresses itself in many ways. The little boy memorizes a ditty taught to him by his father, and he is able to say it 80 years later. The Navy sailor steers the ship through a terrible typhoon for 3 days nonstop, without food and drink, when all of his shipmates are seasick. The doctor loves and prays for every patient without their knowing about it. The mother cleans up the messy pants of a young child with diarrhea, saying, "Honey, it's not your fault. You couldn't help it." The wife gets up early to make coffee every morning, just the way her husband likes it. The doggie waits by the door for the owner to return and wags her tail when he comes through the door. The kitty purrs. The songbird sings. Typically, people think of love as romantic love, as in honey and sweetheart. But romantic love is only a minor part of a human lifetime. There are many types of love other than personal romantic love, and they infuse our everyday experience. Love of pets, love of family and friends, love of freedom, love of purpose, love of country, love of attributes, love of creation, love as virtue, love as enthusiasm, love as forgiveness, love as acceptance, love as motivator, love as appreciation, love as kindness, love as essence of relationship, love as group energy, for example, Alcoholics Anonymous, love as admiration, love as respect, love as valor, love as fraternal bonds of unity, buddies, classmates, shipmates, teammates, love as friendship, love as loyalty, love as affection, love as cherishing, love as self-sacrificing maternal love, love as devotion. Love is a many-splendored thing, as the popular song goes. Experientially, this statement is true. When we have surrendered all of the resistances to love and let go of the negative feelings that block love, then the world is radiant with the splendor of love. On the level of love, this radiance is no longer hidden from us. Love heals. Love facilitates healing. It transforms life. We see this in the true story about a duck hunter who was suddenly changed by witnessing an act of love. One day, he was out duck hunting, which he often did for recreation. As per his usual experience, he saw a duck flying, shot it, and watched it fall to the ground, badly injured. To his sudden amazement, he watched as the female mate of the injured duck immediately flew down on top of her companion and spread her wings over him to shelter him. Seeing her love, the heart of a hunter was changed. He never hunted again. Once you become loving, there are certain things you can never do again, and there are certain things you can do in the energy field of love that are impossible otherwise. Moreover, people do things for you that they would not do for others. Love makes possible the miraculous without labeling it miraculous. Love has a transfiguring effect. Sometimes it is best not to tell people that you love them, because they'll get scared and think that you have designs on them, or you want something from them. Frankly, some people are afraid and suspicious of love. Therefore, you love such people without telling them. Lovingness is a way of being that transforms everything around you because of the radiation of that energy. It happens of its own. We don't have to do anything, and we don't have to call it anything. Love is the energy that silently transfigures every situation. This means that people who are hateful will, in our presence, suddenly become willing to forgive others. We can see the person transform right in front of us. Letting go of anger, they might say, "Well, there's no reason to be so mad at him. He's too young to know better." They will find an excuse to defend the person instead of attacking him. Love empowers us and the people around us to do things that we would not be capable of otherwise. Forgiveness is an aspect of love that allows us to see life events from the viewpoint of grace. We forgive ourselves for the errors we made when we were less evolved. It is helpful to see the ego, or small part of ourselves, as a cute little teddy bear. The teddy bear is not bad. We don't hate or scold the little bear. We love it and accept it for what it is, a cute little animal who doesn't know any better. We transcend the smaller aspects of ourselves by accepting and loving them. We see the ego as limited, not bad. In the energy field of love, we are surrounded with love, and that brings gratitude. We are thankful for our life and for all the miracles of life. We are thankful for the doggies and the kitties, because they represent love. We are grateful for every act of kindness from others, their affection, caringness, and thoughtfulness. Eventually, we just become love. Everything we do and say, every movement we make, is energized by the lovingness that we have owned within ourselves. Whether speaking to a large audience or petting the dog, the energy of love is felt to be pouring out. We want to share what we hold in the heart as an experiential knowingness, and we hold it in the heart for everyone and everything, that they would be feeling it too. We pray for that inner experience of infinite love for everyone around us, including the animals. Our life is a blessing to everything around us. We acknowledge to others and to our animals the gift that they are to us. Love emanates from the heart. When we are in the presence of people who love each other, we pick up that energy. The love of our loved ones, pets, and friends is the love of divinity for us. when we go to bed at night, we give thanks that we were surrounded with love all day. Each moment is possible only because of love. The writing of this book is possible only because of love. In the state of love, we wake up every morning and give thanks for another day of life, and we seek to make life better for everyone around us. Because of the presence of love, things go better. The eggs get fried better. The ducky gets saved. The kitty gets fed. And the doggy is adopted from the pound and brought home. We share our love with everything around us. All forms of life. Kitties, doggies, other people, all living things. Yes, even the villains. If it is our job to watch over the captured villain, we seek to make his life tolerable. We say, "I'm sorry that I have to hold a gun to your head, but that's my job." We try to be as gracious and generous as we can be, without exception. The more we love, the more we can love. Love is limitless. Love begets love. This is why psychiatrists recommend having a pet. A dog, for example, brings love and expands love in the heart of the owner. Love prolongs life. In fact, research documents that having a dog extends the owner's life by 10 years. Just think of all the bizarre exercises, diets, and other regimens that people go through to add relatively small amounts of time onto their life when they can simply get a dog and add 10 years. Love has a powerful anabolic effect. Love increases endorphins, which are life-enhancing hormones. You live 10 years longer with a dog in your life because a pet dog catalyzes the energy of love, and that energy of love heals and prolongs life. The energy of love has the capacity to heal our bodies when conditions are appropriate. On the physical level, because of the prevailing positive mental state, physical illnesses often resolve themselves. Some diseases automatically heal without any particular attention being paid to them, and those that still remain usually respond to consciousness techniques. Persistent illnesses that are unresponsive to treatment are viewed as karmically, symbolically, or spiritually significant. Overall, there is a decreasing awareness of the body, which now goes about its business, and seems to take care of itself on its own. We are no longer identified as a body. There is a loss of interest in dealing with health matters on a purely physical level, and there are times when awareness of the body disappears altogether, unless we focus on it for some particular reason. Intuitive understanding progressively replaces thinkingness, which begins to disappear. Over time, thinkingness and its mental processes are replaced by spontaneous, intuitive knowingness. Logic is bypassed. This occurs because at the highest level of vibration, everything in the universe is connected with everything else. Our understanding unfolds as revelation from this interconnected field. The knowing is holistic rather than limited. Because of the inner quiet, we have the ability to perceive the thoughts and feelings of others on a nonverbal level. Nonverbal communication with others becomes possible and commonplace. Negative emotions are no longer experienced because the small self has been transcended, absorbed into the greater self. Emotional phenomena are thereby transformed. Loss, for example, is experienced as transitory disappointment or regret rather than as grief. Unconditional love. By continual surrender, we experience the state of unconditional love, calibrates at 540, which is rare and occurs in only 0.04% of the population. This energy is miraculous, inclusive, non-selective, transformative, unlimited, effortless, radiant, devotional, saintly, diffuse, merciful, and selfless. It is characterized by inner joy, faith, ecstasy, patience, compassion, persistence, essence, beauty, synchronicity, perfection, surrender, rapture, vision, and openness. We relinquish seeing the personal self as a causal agent. Everything happens effortlessly by synchronicity. Joy emanates from the inner subjective experience of our own existence. The power of the joy is subjective, not stemming from any source outside of oneself. Thus, the energy of motor performance is inexhaustible. We may dance with ecstasy all night in a candlelit chapel, as if being danced by the source of life itself. In that state, the innate perfection and stunning beauty of all that exists shine forth like a luminous radiance, as the infusion of spiritual energy facilitates the transfiguration from perception to vision, from the linear to the non-linear, and from the limited to the unlimited. While functioning in the world is still possible at the higher vibrations of love, high 500s, we may end up leaving the ordinary arena of commerce and abandoning our prior social milieu and occupation. In such states, the miraculous is common. What is termed supernatural is seen to occur all of the time, inexplicable by reason, logic, or cause and effect. It is clear that no person performs miracles. They occur spontaneously on their own when conditions are appropriate. The development of a spiritual ego is avoided by the realization that the phenomena are a gift from beyond our personal self. We are only the channels of love, not its origin. Spiritual progress is known to be the result of grace, not the result of our personal endeavors. Gratitude for the state replaces pride of accomplishment. The process of surrender continues ever more deeply as we let go of all doubt, all belief systems, all perceptions, all positions, all opinions, and all attachments. We become willing to surrender all attachments, even attachment to the exquisite state of ecstasy, which is beyond description. Out of humility, all opinions about others are surrendered. In a certain way, nobody can help being other than what they are. Love knows this truth and takes no position. Love augments the positive about others rather than their defects. It focuses on life's goodness in all of its expressions. Unconditional love is a love that doesn't expect anything from others. When we have become loving, we have no limitations or demands on others that they should be a certain way in order to be loved. We love them no matter how they are, even if they are obnoxious. We feel sorry for the criminals that they saw a life of crime as their best option. When love is unconditional, there's no attachment, expectation, hidden agenda, or bookkeeping of who gives what to whom. Our love is unconditional for whatever we are and whatever they are. It is given without requirements. No strings are attached. We don't expect anything back when giving. We have surrendered all conscious and unconscious expectations of the other person. Love illuminates the essence of, and therefore the lovability of, others. This is because love opens the heart. Instead of perception, which perceives, the heart knows. The mind thinks and argues, but the heart knows and continues. So even when people make mistakes, we love them. Thoughts tell us one thing, but the heart tells us something else. The mind can be critical and disagree, but the heart is loving no matter what. The heart does not put any conditions on what's out there. Only the mind does that. Love makes no demands. A key to making love unconditional is the willingness to forgive. With forgiveness, events and people are recontextualized as simply limited, not bad or unlovable. With humility, we are willing to relinquish our perception of a past event. We pray for a miracle to see the truth about the situation or person, and we surrender all of our opinions about the matter. We look at the payoffs we're getting from keeping our perception of what occurred, and we let go of each little payoff. The pleasure of self-pity, of being right, of being wronged, and of our resentments. Eventually, we surrender the very idea of forgiveness. To forgive someone implies that we're still seeing the person or situation as wrong, and therefore in need of being forgiven. True surrender means letting go completely of seeing it in such a way. When we surrender our perception completely, letting go of all judgment, then the whole situation is transfigured, and we see the person as lovable. Since all judgment is really self-judgment, we have liberated ourselves in the process. On the level of unconditional love, we love everybody and everything, even Adolf Hitler. We look at him as a person who was taken over by negative energies, and we're willing to forgive Hitler, who couldn't help what happened to him. He was overcome by evil. Instead of hating evil, we feel sorrow and compassion that people have become overwhelmed by such negativity. Hitler did what he thought he was required to do by honor. That was his contextualization at the time. He was captured by certain ideals and beliefs current in his time. Even with Hitler, then, we can see that he was dedicated and he thought he was being of service in what he did. In World War II, the kamikaze pilots were doing what they thought they should be doing for their country. And even though they were trying to bomb and kill us, it isn't necessary to hate them. We can respect their willingness to give up their life for their country. We can see that everybody who violates the law of love is really a victim of some societal belief system or the pressures of the time. Oneness. As the state progresses, all of existence takes on a different meaning, and we become aware of the inner beingness and essence of everything, rather than just its form. Because of this change of perception, the perfection of all things stands revealed. This experience is outside of time. There is no past or future. In its highest vibration, love sees no separation between the individual and the rest of the universe. We experience total at-oneness with all things. In this state, the total oneness of all things has a greater sense of reality than the ordinary perceptions of the self in the world, and it can only be described as profound. As the inner shifts occur, our lifestyle may or may not show a change to the external observer. However, habits and behavior, although they may appear to be the same, are no longer compulsive or driven. They can often be dropped, altered, or changed without undue discomfort. On the other hand, there may indeed be sudden changes in lifestyle, including major shifts in vocation, because of the change of inner values and expansion of interests and vision. Now that we are connected to a greater dimension, there may be an immersion in it through contemplation, meditation, art, music, movement, reading, writing, teaching, and participation in spiritual groups with similar objectives. Letting go now becomes more automatic and continuous. Periods of inner stillness and beauty begin to occur with greater frequency and duration. These may occur at a very profound level. Oddly, they may follow episodes of great inner turmoil and struggle. These periods of intense inner work occur because we can no longer tolerate negativity. Now that we have greater power of consciousness, we are able to reach down and handle problems at the deepest levels of consciousness. These may be such problems as those concerning the source of our identity or concept of self. Breakthroughs of great serenity and peace may also occur after prolonged periods of continual surrender, as seen in the following example. At one point, being in a state of constant joy, an event occurred which brought to awareness a conflict that stemmed from the deepest way in which we can relate to others. It was difficult to look at and experience out, but because the prevailing state had so much high energy to it, it was possible to let the inner conflict come up and let it run its course, to be resolved once and for all. It ran for 10 solid days, unceasingly, and for that period of time, The approach was to surrender constantly the conflict and let it go without trying to alter it in any way. For a while, the inner conflict seemed as if it would be unending. However, previous experience with the surrender process had confirmed that every feeling sooner or later runs out if we just keep letting it go. Moving temporarily to a small cabin in the middle of the woods intensified the process because there were no other distractions. Then the source of the conflict deepened, and even more painful feelings came up in full force. There was a great deal of inner turmoil, at times almost agony and despair. Determined not to give up or allow a block in the flow of the process, finally, the bottom of the pit was reached, and up came black despair of overwhelming intensity. In spite of this, there was the knowing that everything would be okay, because the primary identification was not with the despair, but with the surrendering itself. Finally, all of the resistance to the despair was totally and completely let go. Instantly it vanished. The despair, which had been overwhelming and nearly unbearable, vanished in an instant. In its place, there was profound peace beyond description. It was infinite in its dimension, curiously powerful, and totally unassailable. There was a profound inner stillness, and all perception of time stopped. Instead of time, there was only the motion of the phenomena of the world occurring. The next day, the experience continued, and in fact, was even stronger. Then, out of curiosity, there was a re-entry into the world to see what it would be like to experience ordinary life from this state of consciousness. Even while walking down Fifth Avenue in New York City, the same profound stillness, harmony, and peace prevailed. This pervasive peace and stillness seemed to underlie all of the superficial chaos, noise, and confusion of the city. It was as though the power and strength of that dimension of stillness was the power that enabled it all to happen and held it all together in one continuous unity. Within the essence of that stillness was unlimited power, and it was clear that it was this very power that counteracted and balanced the collective negativity of the city. As without, so within. Similarly, it was clear that this same cohesive power is that which also counterbalances the negativity of the personality. If unopposed, that negativity would destroy the person and the body with it. We said in previous sections that the lower emotions are associated with an accumulation of energy in the lower energy centers of the body called chakras. As our consciousness rises due to the letting go of negativity, this energy tends to rise to higher centers so that, at the level of love, the energy has moved up to the heart chakra. As love becomes unconditional and ever joyous, the personal dimension of love gives way to universal love. In general, we say of a person who has reached the level of love that they are big-hearted or all heart. This phrase expresses the shift of interest and focus of the person's life to that which is loving. This upward shift of focus is accompanied by an overall change of perception, a different point of view than that which characterizes the focus of attention of a person who is involved in the negative emotions. For example, when a person is in a lower state of mind, an old gentleman carelessly dressed standing on a corner would be perceived as a bum. With that characterization goes other negative thoughts, such as, he might be dangerous. Let's avoid him. He's costing us taxpayers. He's probably on welfare. The police ought to clear the streets of such derelicts. He should be in jail or in a mental hospital. By contrast, the person who is in a loving state might well see him as an interesting person whose face reflects a lot of life experience, character, and wisdom. He might appear as a liberated soul who has pretty much finished with the world and has evolved into beingness, beyond doingness and havingness. There was an encounter with just such a man on Fifth Avenue while in that state of total inner stillness described above. While walking down the sidewalk, the old gentleman perceived that state of inner stillness with one glance, and in return he became totally open. The eyes gazed widely, such that nothing was hidden, and the soul became completely open to be read. It was apparent that he was a man who had realized his own true inner self and was totally at peace. He was, in fact, part and parcel of that powerful, positive, loving energy that was holding the city together. With that glance, we shared our oneness, our timeless oneness. Though strangers, our souls were united and resounded with each other. The one self radiated forth. That oneness was the energy counteracting the total negativity of New York City at that moment. In our open gaze, there was a cosmic oneness, calibrates as true. There was an all-silent knowingness that the oneness reflected an infinite energy that was counterbalancing the total negativity of New York City at the time, because the power that was shared was infinite. Without a counterbalance, the city would self-destruct. It was a silent, prevailing, infinite state of consciousness. It was a profound moment in which one of the laws of consciousness was experientially verified. Love is the ultimate law of the universe. Statement calibrates at 750. Chapter 13. Peace. In peace, there is no longer any conflict. There is a total absence of negativity and an all-encompassing lovingness that is experienced as serenity, tranquility, timelessness, completion, fulfillment, stillness, and contentment. There is inner quiet and light, a feeling of oneness, unity, and total freedom. The peace is imperturbable. Actions become effortless, spontaneous, harmonious, and loving in their effect. There is a shift of perception of the universe and of our relationship to it. The inner self prevails. The personal self has been transcended, with all of its feelings, beliefs, identities, and concerns. This is the ultimate state sought by all seekers, whether they are religious, humanist, or have no spiritual or philosophical identification at all. The profound impact of peace. We have all had moments of profound peace, where time and the world seemed to suddenly stop, and we have come in contact with the infinite. In recent years, there have been a number of books about the near-death experience. Under various circumstances, this experience has happened to people who have died and then returned to the body. Characteristically, their lives have been transformed by the experience, and they never forget it. Their vision of the world, its significance, and their personal significance in it has changed considerably. In the movie Lost Horizon, once the hero had experienced Shangri-La, although he returned to the world again, he viewed it in a totally different way. He longed at any cost to return to Shangri-La where the state of peace prevailed. Once the experience of peace has occurred, we are no longer a victim of the world. We are no longer at its effect as we once were, for we have had a glimpse of the truth about it and of what we really are. With continual surrender, we begin to experience these states of peace with ever-increasing frequency. At times, they may become quite profound and of greater and greater duration. When the clouds are removed, the sun shines forth, and we discover that peace was the truth all along. Surrender is the mechanism that uncovers the true nature of our existence. When a person is in the state of peace, they test strong with kinesiology, and nothing makes them weak, whether it is mental, emotional, or physical. There is no longer identification with the body as ourself, and physical disorders may or may not be healed. We are indifferent to them. Physical concerns have lost any significant meaning. With the experience of inner peace comes great strength. An energy field of total peace is unassailable. The person who has found inner peace can no longer be intimidated, controlled, manipulated, or programmed. In this state, we are invulnerable to the threats of the world and have, therefore, mastered earthly life. When the state of peace has become established, ordinary human suffering is no longer possible, because the very basis of that vulnerability has been totally relinquished. Silent transmission. We describe the person who has reached that state of peace as enlightened and being in a state of grace. Within and beyond that condition are various advanced states of illumination and levels of realization described by the mystics, sages, saints, and avatars. There is a silent, nonverbal benefit of being in the actual presence of an enlightened state. Classically, it would be an advanced spiritual teacher, saint, or sage. Seekers travel great distances to be in the physical presence of this energy field. The devotee, or seeker, receives silent transmission of the high-frequency energy of the teacher's aura, described as transmission of no mind, grace of the guru, or benediction of the teacher. This transmission happens of its own and is not personal. The state of infinite peace radiates forth unconditionally of its own from the energy field of the teacher or saint. When the Buddha gave his disciple a flower, it was symbolic of the transmission of the energy. If we have been in the presence of a great teacher who radiates this energy, we will never be the same. The most beneficial thing that can happen to us is to have been in the presence of a great teacher, because we pick up the vibration by being in the physical presence of that state of peace and complete surrender. The silent transmission of this realized state is a nonverbal, energetic phenomenon that does not depend upon logic or language. The vibration that is within the aura of the advanced teacher functions as a carrier wave to facilitate our comprehension of the words that are being spoken. But it's the wave of energy and not the words that are the catalytic element. Via silent transmission, the energy from the advanced teacher or saint is incorporated into our aura, our brain function, and our whole being. It's because this energy of peace is transmitted outward into the world that mankind is still alive. It would have destroyed itself a long time ago without this energy to counterbalance it. That's why our own inner evolution serves all of mankind. By reaching these higher states of lovingness and peace within ourselves, we become a saving presence in the world. Surrender to ultimate reality. The hallmark of this level is desirelessness. There is no need to want for anything, because everything manifests in our life spontaneously and automatically, without conscious will or effort. Thoughts held in mind at this level are very powerful and tend to manifest rapidly. The phenomenon of synchronicity is continuous. The mechanisms of cause and effect and the inner working of the universe stand forth clearly revealed, as we are now witnessing the very basis of reality itself. These very high states of awareness happen spontaneously and unexpectedly, and they tend to recur and stay for longer and longer durations. Once this has been experienced, our intention automatically becomes to make the state of peace permanent. How this state occurs and what it is like is demonstrated in the following account, which describes what happened after 3.5 years of continual surrender. It was a cold winter day. Surrender was continuous for 11 straight days at a level of consciousness that had never been reached previously, not even during psychoanalysis. It had to do with the ego's very basis of survival and its identification as an individual. It had to do with how we experience our own existence and the desire to experience our own beingness. As the days went by, the process seemed endless. A doubt surfaced. Was this attempting the impossible? It became clear that the purpose of that doubt itself was a defense mechanism. It was relinquished, and the surrender continued at great depth. Then, entering a restaurant on that cold, rainy Sunday afternoon, sitting down alone at the table, suddenly the world was miraculously transformed. A profound sense of inner stillness and peace occurred. It was greater than anything imaginable. The experience was beyond time. In fact, time had no meaning whatsoever, nor did space exist in the way in which we commonly experience it. All things were connected. There was only one life expressing itself with one self through all living things. There was no identification with the body and no interest in it. It was no longer any more interesting than any other body in the room. All emotions and events were interconnected, and all phenomena occurred because each thing was manifesting its own inner nature spontaneously, as though movement and growth were the spontaneous unfolding of potential. There was a rock-like quality to the imperturbable stillness. It was obvious that the real self was invisible, without beginning, without end, and that there had been only a transitory identification with the body and the story that went with the identification as an individual. It seemed very strange that one could previously have thought that one was an isolated body separate from others, with a limited beginning and a finite ending. The thought seemed absurd. There was no longer any feeling of a separate self, and the pronoun I disappeared and became meaningless. Instead, there was the awareness of being all things. It had always been and always would be. True beingness stood outside of time. The period of time that the body had been on earth seemed like a split second, during which the truth of timeless identity had been forgotten due to being blinded by the smaller self. Then, how it had happened revealed itself. There had been a wishful thought to experience separate existence, and this wishful thought had manifested itself as the individual person with an individual identity and a physical body to go with it. The interconnectedness of all things was starkly obvious. It was the holographic universe as described by the Buddha and by modern advanced theoretical physics, both of whom agree as to the intrinsic nature of the universe. Because everything was perfect, there was nothing to wish for, nothing to desire, nothing to create, and nothing to become. There was only that, the very essence of beingness out of which existence arises. That beingness is the source of existence, yet curiously, not its cause. There was a profound familiarity to the awareness. It was as though one had always known it, as if one were home at last. There were no emotions or feelings. There was an unawareness of sensations. Even though they seemed to go on, they were no longer personal or of concern. By way of experimentation, a thought was held for a split second to see what would happen. Almost instantly, there was an effect in the physical world. The thought of butter or coffee, for instance, resulted in the waiters coming over immediately with the items, and yet no word had been spoken. No words seemed necessary. Communication occurred with anyone on a level of silence. The body drove the car to a meeting that evening where no one noticed anything different. Everyone seemed to be intensely alive. Their aliveness shone forth from their beingness, and the self, which was the same for all, shone forth through their eyes. The body spoke to others, spontaneously carrying on normal conversations and behaving in its usual way. At the time, the body seemed like a karmic wind-up toy, run by all of its accustomed patterns and programs, not needing any attention in the slightest. It seemed to know what to do and did it very effectively and effortlessly. All conversations and interactions were merely witnessed as phenomena, not directed. it seemed like a strange vanity to have once believed that there had been a small self as the author of the body's actions. In reality, the body was at the effect of the universe, and there had never been a doer of its actions. Phenomena were as vibrations of the mind that had no separate existence or reality. There was allness only. Only that oneness actually existed. The next afternoon a thought arose. Now that the way to reality had been revealed, there could be a return to the consciousness of being that individual person which had formerly been accepted as real. Just as the air in the room does not experience the contents of the room, there was no longer an I that experienced my own existence. In that space, there was no I to experience the I am. To return to individual consciousness meant that a choice would have to be made. In truth, the choice made itself, for there was no I to make a decision. The desire to experience the individual self became re-energized on its own. The option of letting it go was present, but there was the return of memory of things yet to be finished in the world. As the sense of I-ness returned, the choices were witnessed, not actively decided. The process of returning was taking place. It could be allowed, or it could be let go. It was allowed, and so the process of return continued. When the next morning dawned, the return was complete, but now with a different sense of personal identity. The truth of the self had been revealed. The responsibility for having chosen to experience life once again as an individual was accepted, yet without being at the effect of a belief in individual existence. In fact, by conscious choosing, there was complete responsibility for it. Experientially, all of this happened autonomously. At one time, such states of consciousness as the above were considered to be solely the province of the mystic. At the present time, however, investigation of these states and the information obtainable from them is considered to be the leading edge of science, especially that branch of physics concerned with quantum mechanics and high-energy subatomic particles. Investigations of these particles indicate that they are not things in the usual sense, but are actually events that occur as a result of energy frequencies. Science now postulates a transcendent frequency beyond space and time. An impressive body of research in many laboratories has demonstrated that the brain perceives by sophisticated mathematical analysis of frequency patterns. These findings have resulted in the so-called holographic paradigm, which states that everything in the universe is connected with everything else, including the human mind. In the hologram, each part contains the whole. Consequently, each individual mind is capable of reflecting the entire universe. This relationship between consciousness and science constitutes a whole field in which there is rapidly growing interest, as is indicated by the publishing of such books as The Holographic Paradigm, Wholeness and the Implicate Order, The Tao of Physics, The Dancing Wu Li Masters, Mindful Universe, Psychoenergetic Science, and the publication of articles with titles such as Field Consciousness and the New Perspective on Reality, The Enfolding, Unfolding Universe, The Holographic Model, Physics and Mysticism, and The Medium, The Mystic, and The Physicist. Leading among these researchers are neuroscientist Carl Pribram of Stanford University and the late physicist David Bohm of the University of London, whose theories can be summarized. Our brains mathematically construct concrete reality by interpreting frequencies from another dimension, a realm of meaningful, patterned, primary reality that transcends time and space. The brain is, therefore, a hologram interpreting a holographic universe. It is interesting that the theories of advanced theoretical physics, which are the product of so-called left-brain activities, now require a new context in order to be comprehended. The context that is evolving from these left-brain scientific researchers matches reality as witnessed by the mystic, who represents right-brain function. Thus, Whichever side of the mountain we choose to climb, we end up at the same point, the peak. A third way up the mountain is through the mechanism of surrender, and each of us, therefore, has the opportunity to verify for ourselves the ultimate nature of reality itself, which is the same as that revealed to the mystic or the physicist. We can envision that with each and every surrender, we take another step up the side of the mountain. Some of us will ascend until the view gets better and choose to stop there. Others will go still higher. And then there will be those of us who will not be satisfied until we have reached the very peak and verified it for ourselves. Although, at that point, there is no longer an individual person to verify anything, for it has been surrendered completely. Chapter 14. Reducing Stress and Physical Illness. Psychological Aspects and Stress Proneness. Though available to all of us, the state of peace is reached by very few people. The inner experience of most people is marked by constant stress. Most of the stress that results in emotional and physical disorders in our society is psychological in origin. Our response to stress depends on our stress proneness, and, as we pointed out earlier, this is directly the result of the amount of suppressed and repressed feelings we have accumulated. The more emotional pressure that is surrendered and let go, the less vulnerable we are to the stress response and stress-related diseases. The main stress, to the majority of us, most of the time, is not due to external stimuli, but to the pressure of our own suppressed emotions. These suppressed emotions become the primary stressor, so that even in a calm external environment, we are still subject to chronic internal stress. We can observe that the external stress factors are merely the straws that eventually break the camel's back. The main stress load is what we carry around with us all the time. The psychological programming in our society is so extensive that for most people, even relaxing and enjoying a vacation is a problem. Guilt says we should be doing something else. There is disappointment when immediate relaxation does not occur. There is restlessness and the endless pursuit of fun activities to avoid the pain of facing our own inner self. Most busy executives begin to secretly look forward to getting back to work while they are on vacation. They may outwardly grumble about their heavy workload, but when they return to the accustomed routine, they feel normal again. The effects of suppressed and repressed feelings plus stress-precipitating factors are responsible for most emotional and physical illnesses. There is an emotional-psychological component in all diseases, and because of this, it is possible to reverse the disease process by removing the internal stress factors. This accounts for the many recoveries reported daily from serious and potentially fatal illnesses by the use of emotional-spiritual techniques. Many cures take place after all medical methods have failed. One reason is that, at this stage of "there's nothing else we can do," the patients give up, and they seek and accept the true basic nature and cause of their illness. Acknowledging and letting go of suppressed feelings progressively reduces a person's personal stress proneness, thereby lowering the vulnerability to stress-related problems and illnesses. Most people who learn and practice the letting go technique notice a progressive improvement in physical health and vitality. Medical aspects of stress. Stress is our response to a perceived threat, real or imaginary, to our security or bodily equilibrium. The stimulus may be internal or external. It may be physical, mental, or emotional. Basic research into the body's physical response to stress was done by Dr. Hans Selye and Dr. Walter Cannon. Selye described what he called the general adaptation syndrome. In response to a stressful stimulus, the body first goes through an alarm reaction, then secondly, a stage of resistance, and if the stimulus continues, it may result in the third stage of exhaustion syndrome. The alarm reaction occurs via the pathway of the cerebral cortex, hypothalamus, lower brain, adrenal glands, bloodstream, cortisol, and adrenaline. In addition, there is the release of brain hormones and stimulation of the body's sympathetic nervous system. The adrenaline then goes to all of the body's organs and prepares them for fight or flight. Many people, especially in big cities, learn to live off the adrenaline high of constant challenges. The threat to survival of the intense competition keeps the adrenaline flowing. Typically, they get depressed on weekends or vacations. They are addicted to excitement and abnormal stimulation. They get used to the semi-euphoria induced by the high levels of cortisol. The second stage, that of resistance, is the body's attempt to restore homeostatic balance. It involves hormonal changes and shifts in metabolism and mineral balance. Commonly, there is sodium, accompanied by water retention in the tissues. Some executives, for instance, develop swollen ankles as the week goes on, and then on Friday evening, they have frequency of urination. They complain of a letdown due to the sudden decrease in the level of the cortisol hormone. In addition to a somewhat euphoric effect, cortisol also has an anesthetic effect. Therefore, during the letdown period of low cortisol production, weekenders may notice physical symptoms that were ignored during the excitement of the work week, and they may complain of many aches and pains over the weekend that weren't experienced while at work. The third stage is exhaustion. If stress continues unabated beyond the capacity of the body's coping mechanisms, eventually they begin to fail. The state of adrenal exhaustion sets in. The body's defenses have become too weak to counter the effects of stress. There is suppression of the immune system. The body's organs begin to show pathologic changes due to the long exposure to stress hormones. The body's energy stores have become depleted, leading eventually to disease and finally death of the organism. During the acute alarm reaction, the stomach's motility halts, digestion stops, and the blood supply to the stomach's lining is decreased. As stress continues, due to imbalance of the nervous system and hormone changes, hyperacidity and overproduction of digestive enzymes occur. The heightened digestive enzymes and hydrochloric acid, acting on the weakened gastrointestinal lining, result in ulceration, producing stress ulcers. With continued stress, the ulcers may hemorrhage or perforate and precipitate a medical catastrophe. In other cases, the reaction to chronic abnormal stress may be failure to produce hydrochloric acid or enzymes, resulting in chronic indigestion and poor nutrition. Besides the gastrointestinal tract, the cardiovascular system also reacts to stress by an alarm reaction. As the stress becomes chronic, the heart, blood vessels, and kidneys may go through damage, resulting in hypertension and/or coronary disease. The stress is eventually responsible for strokes, heart attacks, and hypertension, all of which are major causes of death in the United States. Energy system response to stress and the acupuncture system. The body has three nervous systems. 1, the voluntary network of nerves under conscious control and distributed primarily to voluntary muscles. 2, the involuntary or autonomic nervous system, sympathetic and parasympathetic, which is usually unconscious and which controls the body's organs and physiological functions, such as heartbeat, blood flow and distribution, digestion, and body chemistries. 3, the acupuncture system, which transmits the bioenergy to all the body's structures and internal organs. This third system is least known in Western medicine, but long understood in Eastern medicine and society. In the acupuncture system, there is a flow of vital energies throughout the physical body via the body's invisible energy blueprint. This energy system is described as having 12 main channels over the surface of the physical body, down the 12 major acupuncture meridians. From these channels, there are many tributaries leading into the body's various organ systems. Abnormal distribution of energy into these meridians results in dysfunction of the affected organs and eventually the evolvement of the disease process. This vital bioenergy is the very flow of life itself. It is very quickly reactive to stress. This bioenergy reacts from instant to instant due to fluctuating factors in our lives, which are the changing patterns of our perceptions, thoughts, and feelings. The conventional measurement of the body's medical reactions is relatively slow. A fleeting thought, which may be accompanied by an emotional pang, does not bring about a measurable change in the body's blood pressure or pulse in response. However, it instantly registers in the bioenergy system, where a variety of rapid changes can be observed by scientific, psychic, and clinical methods. The overall balance of the body's acupuncture energy system is regulated by the activity of the thymus gland. The bioenergy system is intimately connected to the body's immune system via the thymus gland. Chronic stress weakens the body's immune system, suppresses the thymus gland, and throws the bioenergy system out of balance. Strengthening the thymus gland or taking thymus supplements rebalances the bioenergy system. An extensive explanation of this is found in the books Behavioral Kinesiology and Life Energy by John Diamond, M.D. Interventions to Alleviate Stress. Research at UCLA by Libeskind and Shavit during the 1980s further clarified the relationship among stress, suppression of the immune system, and the development of cancer by showing the intermittent stress on the release of the brain opiates known as endorphins. Stress in the form of intermittent shocks suppresses the immune system. When the immune response is strong, there is the release of the brain's endorphins, so-called anti-cancer killer cells, which attack and kill young, growing tumor cells. But when the immune activity is suppressed, and there is a reduced presence of endorphins, the activity of the anti-cancer killer cells diminishes. The report in